You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants, featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazoni, part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
You know, going over the notes, Doug, and the Giants aren't doing too well lately.
You know, I noticed that, and every other person who's watched the Giants over the last week has also noticed that.
I guess you could say they are sucking ass right now. Is that, I mean, we're supposed to be like a professional.
Like, Brian, they're getting awfully close to being the butt-ass Giants.
Oh boy. Well, we don't want that to happen. That's going to tank him for 2 years.
Exactly.
It's been a rough week. Even since we last recorded, it's been rough. The Mariners have really tuned him up. I guess is a better assessment than the Giants lost 2 out of 3. Brian Wu and Logan Gilbert looking just absolutely dominant. Sure was predicted on this podcast. Yeah. For as much as I can sometimes be unprofessional with my language, I'd like to say that Doug and I provide trenchant insight, sharp, keen analysis. So anyway, Doug, do you think the Giants will win more than one game this month?
Brian, I think the Giants will win at least 4 games this month.
Oh my gosh.
They've got one in the bag, and I think they're going to get another 3 by the end of the month. They can do it. I believe in them. I want you to believe in them. Everyone out there, let's hear it. Let's support our boys as they try to win 4 games.
So, I mean, I think the story is this July goodbye, June boom and July goodbye. I'm not sure. It's a run that every team goes through. It just, the Giants are playing in such a tough division, in such a tough league, that it really feels like any ground they lose is like a huge slide back. But, you know, this isn't just because, oh, they suck. The players aren't playing well. They have a spate, a rash, a deluge, a plethora, many, many injuries. However you'd like to characterize it or describe it. It's been rough, and it looks like the curse of the Croncast has returned. We thought we had escaped it switching networks, Doug, but no. Me talking about Thairo Estrada so much, the baseball gods said he's out for 4 to 6 weeks now. There, shut up. And so the Giants' best position player, gone. Their third best starting pitcher has a tired shoulder. He's gone for a while, and it sucks. That's a big hurt.
Yeah, I mean, the Giants have been dealing with injuries all season, and it seems like they get one guy back and put 2 guys on the IL. I'm sorry, Scott Alexander, I'm not counting you. The Giants got Mike Yastrzemski back, and they put Di Sclafani and Tyra on the IL. And it's really tough. You know, they need, at this point, they need their guys to stay healthy. Depth will take you so far, and we can see that that's what happened in June. The Giants' depth really did carry them to a really strong month. But when that attrition just hits and keeps hitting and keeps hitting, there's only so much you can do. Something similar happened at the end of 2015, where the Giants kept having starters go down. Like Joe Panik goes down, they don't really have much of a replacement. I think every starter, except for maybe Brandon Crawford that year, spent significant time on the IL. And so just at the end of the year, they're giving playing time to Marlon Byrd, which works somehow, but they couldn't recover. They were too injured. And so that's why the training staff and the team, if they can't get it together, if these injuries keep happening, then this is what the season's going to be.
And, you know, Mitch Haniger, Thairo Estrada, these are hit by pitches situations. These are not things that a trainer can prevent against players. Really very limited thing that Thairo Estrada said, if he hadn't had his hand protector on, it would have been worse. So, you know, it's like they're taking as much safety precautions as they can to avoid this. Thairo Estrada's outs above average, which I understand people listening to this podcast are still suspicious of the laser guided stats, the analytics, and that's fine. I understand. And this is also the public facing number that we get from StatCast. So who knows if this is even something the teams really look at. To me, Doug, it almost seems like, yes, we're offering the public last generation's technology, where we've already moved on. So, but in any case, plus 11 outs above average for Estrada at second base. And we've seen it with the eye, though. You put him anywhere else in the field, you're like, is that the same guy? But you put him at second base, and like, he's amazing. And he has been exactly that. So the Casey Schmidt, Brett Wisely situation, I think we're walking into. Maybe between the two of them, the Giants will be able to patch something together. But for now, it's enough to say the Giants have lost their best position player. That's a big pain. All that said, maybe Blake Sable's figured something out, Doug.
I think he has. You know, he hit two home runs on Monday. They were fun. It would have been nice if the Giants weren't down by four runs when he hit that three-run homer in the ninth. But, you know, you get what you get, right?
That's the Croncast curse coming back. We had rated Camilo Duvall the number one on the Bullpen Trust Power Rankings for the third straight month. And guess what? The Mariners were not impressed. And I guess neither was Duvall.
No, the Mariners listen to this podcast religiously. It's one of the things that we know about them. And they're like, number one, yeah, we'll show you. You should have put Tyler Rogers there, is what they were saying to us. We got that email from Julio Rodriguez. He emailed us and said, you should have had Tyler Rogers number one.
He said, in all of our scouting, when we looked at Duvall, Rogers was right there too. So we were wondering what the deal was.
Yeah.
But with Blake Sable, or a little over a year since Barry Bonds gave Jock Peterson that pep talk that led to Jock Peterson's three-homer game against the Mets, and then Blake Sable gets pulled aside after batting practice the other night, and Bonds basically goes, "You there, Sable? Swing more confidently. Trust your hands through the zone more." And he went, "Okay, Skip." He had two home runs, and it's nice to think that that Bonds can make the game look easy occasionally for some players. But this is obviously not just Barry Bonds. I think confidence and pep talk, that is a maybe more than 60% of what coaching baseball players is, because if they're good enough to get to the major leagues, right, there's kind of a lot of the stuff that they do that's locked in. So every now and again, maybe someone just needs to remind them, hey, you look like you're drifting here, or you're missing something that you used to do. But Sable's power, that's what I was getting at. That's been an underlying component of his game. It's why the Giants liked him. The public facing numbers, again, to go back to this, indicate that there is some power there. So maybe whatever the public doesn't have numbers wise, the Giants are like, yes, this guy for sure. But Blake Sable has powers. It's not like it just the Giants unlocked something. This is definitely something that they scouted and wanted to capture by trading for him in the Rule 5.
The Giants saw the potential in him. And, you know, the Giants aren't necessarily wrong even when the guys don't work out. I mean, Connor Joe has ended up having a nice major league career, even though it didn't work with the Giants. They saw something in him that was there. They just couldn't get it out of him in 2019. So what they saw in Blake Sable was probably exactly this, a high power guy. The strikeouts are there. They're a little bit of a concern. He's not walking like they like guys to walk. So the aspect of it, which they always emphasize, of controlling the strike zone, is a work in progress, but the power is impressive. He's a lefty hitter who plays catcher. They can throw him in the outfield if they need to. So they're pretty committed, I think, to keeping him around, and they should be. They found a nice player.
The only real thing that I look at is the expected WOBA based on contact and the hard hit rate. Those two numbers, you know, the WOBACON, the WOBA bacon, as I would say bacon. In my head. Yep. 413. The hard hit rate, 39.8%. These are not like top 10% of the league, but they're still very good. They're above average. Defensively, he's rating out with the 75th percentile arm strength, 55th percentile sprint speed. He's hitting the, you know, good exit velocity, great barrel rate, 88th percentile with that. So again, he can really lock on when he gets the right pitch to hit. And to that point about pitch recognition, that's going to be obviously with a guy that's being taken in the Rule 5 draft, that's going to be a work in progress. That makes perfect sense. And I'm sure if the Giants can hold on to him through this year And if this problem persists next year, I'm sure they'll option him. They won't have any fear about doing that. They'll have a player with three fresh options they can use. Oh, they'll definitely be using them. Oh, my God. So congrats, though, Blake Sable, because it's very hard to play Major League Baseball. And he's not, I would say most human beings are not so stupid that they don't know what situation they're walking into. And I feel like the Giants have been very committed to being open with their communication. And they probably told him, like, this is the role we see you in. And, you know, it's kind of the role that David Villar was kind of penciled in for. I think they had higher expectations for Villar, right? But also, like, you're going to be a reserve platoon guy and you're not going to play consistently. And but Sable's definitely made, you know, if David Villar was having this season, I think everyone would be like maybe a little disappointing, but also sort of like, oh, this is still good. This is still a good thing to have. So, and like you said, left-handed, that's important. Doug, what have you found interesting about the Giants this past week?
How much I fucking hate them.
So no, it's more like
I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. I love jokes.
They're really bad. They look so bad. They're so dumb. They look so bad. They just look like a bunch of idiots. It's just so stupid.
A bunch of big, dumb idiots. That's what they look like. I liked Alex Cobb's start. He only went 5 innings, but and the strikeout numbers weren't great. Obviously, the results were a little bit worse than you would hope, but I thought he looked really good, and he was let down by his defense. So that's encouraging. He was struggling his last few starts before he went on the IL. So to see Cobb sort of come back, look like the ground ball machine, their balls were not hit that hard. I think that was a really good sign for the team because they are pretty desperate at this point for another starting pitcher besides Logan Webb.
Yeah, I'm going to pick up right off of that. I mean, Logan Webb's start was impressive. The 11 strikeouts, right, that he had. And I think I mentioned this on the last podcast before the series started, the Mariners series started. The home road splits for Logan Webb are not dire, but they're very interesting. And I'd like to know if they are how they might proceed to address it. But 11 strikeouts at home and a really nice bounce back start after the Blue Jays really tuned him up in the first inning in Toronto. And so a great, nice bounce back start. Again, I'm not in concern mode with Logan Webb. I think it's the ground ball-ness of it. And the strikeouts for him are certainly encouraging. That's one way to pitch around your defense, Doug, just to strike a bunch of guys out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's going to happen when the team is basically on its reserves in the infield, that some of those ground balls are going to get through. He's over his two starts, his start in Toronto and then his start against the Mariners, Logan Webb had a .455 BABIP against him. And I don't think that's a quality of contact thing. I think that's just sometimes baseball happens.
Yeah.
The way he pitched, I think he did a good job, except for obviously the first inning in Toronto. But the way he pitched against the Mariners, he did a good job. And, you know, it worked out a little worse than it would have in most times, but that's why you play the games. God, that's such a cliche. I'm sorry. I am putting $1 in my cliche jar right now.
Thank you very much. I won't edit this out so everyone asks you about it later. How's that jar going? Okay. But no, the other part of that is it's almost like it reveals the Giants' computer modeling for his pitch shape and design and batted balls in play because they know their stadium so well. You know what I mean? Like it almost betrays their proprietary tech. It's like you've got your park down to the inch and you know what kind of pitch and movement plays and swings and all that stuff. Because look, the ERA at home, 2.36, on the road, 4.24. I'm asking questions. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. And the defense wasn't always down to your reserve levels for the whole season. There's been patches. But, you know, I'm overstating it a little bit. I think it's more reasonable for just pitchers not to pitch as well on the road as they do at home. But for a guy like Logan Webb, I think maybe we've set the bar very high and we're like, what's going on here? Why is it? So anyway, I found it interesting that ultimately he seems fine.
So. Yeah, isn't fine.
Anything else?
I want to give a shout out to Lamont Wade Jr. The rest of the offense has basically not been good other than Sable and Wade. But Wade is doing exactly what he's done all year. He is walking a ton. He's getting some hits. He's not striking out that much. And, you know, I think when the team's playing badly and a guy goes like 1-for-3 with a walk out of the leadoff spot or something, it's pretty easy to take that for granted and not think about it. But he's doing what he needs to do. And his defense has been excellent. I think it was on the Tuesday game where he saved a couple runs with a diving catch of a line drive first. He's been a really impressive player this year. I know he's not going to make the All-Star team, but he could.
I scream into a pillow every night.
Yes. Yeah. Don't
because he's not. that's a good one. I'm going to say it's interesting how Patrick Bailey's last couple of weeks have gone, because he's received some national attention for playing so well. He did win that game against the Mets in New York, but hasn't he also had like two catcher's interferences in the past 2 weeks? Am I making this up?
I know he had one against the Mariners. I think there was another one, but
yes,
it might have been Sable who had the other one. That's
okay. Fair enough. It's just foggy. I just remember the Giants have recently had two. So yeah. I think you're right. It was Sable. But in any case, what I find interesting is that Patrick Bailey ultimately still is a rookie, because he's looked really butt ass in July. We're only talking three games. But, you know, he is a rookie. This is going to happen. It's not unusual. But it's also like you still don't run on him. You know what I mean? Like, there is that element of like he's still got his fastball, so you don't want to challenge him. So I think it's interesting that the Giants really their season turns as Patrick Bailey turns. So I think that's a little scary. I'm not prepared for this. I was fine with the Buster Posey era ending. I had like, you know, gotten over it. And now I'm like, I'm not sure I'm ready to go back to one guy being the beating heart of the team. I thought we were doing this in the aggregate. What happened, Saidi Model? I thought it's a whole group of guys. I like your Lamont Wade point. It's nice to have a player that good, that consistently good, who isn't Barry Bonds. So he's the guy that you can not have to worry about and not get too amped up for. Like, we're not in the whole late night Lamont situation, which I think was fun, but it's also sort of a disservice to him, because, you know, and then he had the season that broke that spell. I think it was good in a way, because now he's just like, I'm just going to get on base and I'm going to play solid defense and I'll hit a double every so often and maybe a home run, but, you know, I'll be on base when we get the lead late. How about that? Great. That's fantastic. Yeah. We need a Joey Votto. That's fantastic. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then I actually have one more, which is about the minor league team, because you know who has finally started to hit at AAA is Joey Bart. Yeah. Over the last a little more than a week, since June 28th, he's hit three homers. Those are his first three homers of the year at any level. He is striking out less over the last couple weeks than he had over before. Even if Patrick Bailey is the guy now, to have Joey Bart as a backup, as someone who can fill in, play at a major league level, if not for the Giants, then as, you know, to use him in a trade, I think if he can maintain this production, that would be a really good thing for the Giants, no matter where he ends up at the beginning of August.
Now, we haven't really set our schedule to talk about the trade deadline. We're having Roger Munter on for Monday's show, and we'll be talking about the Giants minor league system and also the draft, which is this weekend, which is weird to say and think about, but that's the case. So where Joey Bart would fall in there? Absolutely. I mean, I think the Giants have been unambiguous. Like, we'd like to have Joey Bart on our team. Right. Can he play well enough to be on our team? Unclear. So yeah. And what are they going to do? I don't really view this slide as anything sort of taking them out of the race. If they're going to just wind up being closer to 5 or 6 games over 500, that's still a good team. It's maybe not as much as we had hoped or as good as we had hoped, but it's something. I like that. Thanks for pointing out Joey Bart. Always a good reminder that he's alive.
Yes.
Oh, and Elliot Ramos. Elliot Ramos has returned from the 60-day IL, as you reminded me before we started recording. So, hey, maybe the two of them can get it going and then be traded together Yes. To the Brewers.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, Brian, what have you found concerning about the Giants since we last did this segment? And I know it's going to be tough to think of something, but I'm asking you to try.
The offense is dire. It's dire. It's so bad. It's really concerning me. It's concerning me a lot. It makes my stomach hurt. The Giants, by wins above replacement, just in their last 2 weeks, 14 games, June 20th, they have the fourth lowest wins above replacement as a team offensively in baseball, 0.1. The Rockies are below them at 0.0, the Red Sox minus 0.2, and the A's 0.4. They are half a win better than the A's by wins.
We're not technically a Major League Baseball team.
Yes, exactly.
They are. They have been registered as a brewery for tax purposes.
There are only five players in the last 2 weeks that the Giants have with weighted runs created plus above league average. One of those players is Mike Yastrzemski. 15 plate appearances. Patrick Bailey has been their best hitter, and that includes the 0 for July he has so far, and Wilmer Flores, Lamont Wade, and Blake Sable. But that's how they're going right now. JD Davis, Michael Conforto, Jock Peterson, those are supposed to be the guys. And, you know, JD Davis is back to his old ways of 30%+ strikeouts, 5% walks. You know, he's got an ISO of 0.057. He still seems like he's hitting the ball hard, but yeah, his at-bats haven't looked so good. So I'm saying all this, Doug, he's hitting .283 in the last 2 weeks with a .429 BABIP. That's on a .057 ISO. So these are just really scorching some singles. That's not what they signed. That's not what they traded for JD Davis to get, is hard hit singles. So defensively, they're still pretty solid. That's what encompasses the WAR, the wins above replacement. And actually, if you look at their team weighted runs created plus, it is last. It's tied with the A's. It's 69, which is not nice. No, it's not. I reject it in this case. The Giants have used 69 for bad.
420 would be nice.
Yeah. I guess another way of rephrasing, Doug, I'm concerned about the Giants because over the last 2 weeks, they have the worst offense in baseball.
Yeah, that's a little worrying. I'm not going to lie. You talked about the offense. I'm concerned about the starting pitching. You know, I said it's nice to have Alex Cobb back to go with Logan Webb. They're both, I think, fine. Maybe a little below their peak, but passable. Then it gets sketchy. And I have to say, I did not like the move to pull Ross Stripling after two innings.
Yes.
Just because it was the plan. That was, you know, that's one of those inflexible, that's the plan, so we have to do it kind of things that you thought might happen when Farhan took over. Where they're like, well, look, I sent the manager the plan, so that's what he has to do no matter what. And like, he was pitching well. You know, you can get more good innings out of a guy than you should do it. Said they go to Alex Wood, who pitched like absolute dog shit. I know we talked about this on the last Groncast. I don't care. He was so bad, I want to talk about it more. And that's what lost that game, that they just decided that they had to stick to the plan no matter what was going on in the game. I mean, Ross Stripling, those two innings were maybe the best he's looked as a Giant. Keep that going. Let it roll. See what happens. And instead, they went with Alex Wood, who's 50-50 shot whether he's going to be Clayton Kershaw or your Uncle Rick. So it was a bad plan executed badly. The Giants lost that game. They deserved it. And that came from management, whether it's Kapler or Zaidi or a combination of both.
Which is bizarre because it really does seem like he does have some flexibility, but maybe not. Maybe he actually doesn't, because my concerning was going to be, I'm a little concerned about Gabe Kapler as the Giants manager. I guess what's starting to bother me is body language, which is like, I'm doing a total straw hat read of the situation, but also the challenging situation is getting out of control. And it does seem like they're just being like, we can win these challenges in the aggregate. You know, it's just, it seems like combinationally, it seems a little leaky, like a little bit of leaking oil situation here. I think the injuries can only take you so far, but you crystallize it perfectly with this Ross Stripling thing, because it makes you start to wonder, so they're not watching the game. Right. And why are we trying to nursemaid Ross Stripling through a rehab or coming back from? Ross Stripling should be expendable. I mean, that's what it seems like, but I mean, why are we pitching him carefully? If you were willing to be reckless with Sean Manaea, because it's like, oh, he can throw hard, but no, you know, we're just going to use him wherever, you know, Russ, yes, that was the perfect example. The plan with Alex Wood is fine. I'm not totally against it. So maybe that was more the thing. It was less the plan for Stripling and more the plan for Wood. And I guess I could see that, but it also, yeah, it has the potential to blow up in your face. The Ross Stripling, let's make him Jacob Junis number two. It's very concerning, but I did joke about that. Like, I think the Giants just like this. This is what they want to do. And so I think that is still worth being like, well, if you're going to play reliever roulette every game, then sometimes you're going to blow your head off. And that was one of those times that they blew their head off. So
exactly. The Giants are tech bros. And sometimes you get Netflix and sometimes you get Quibi.
I do like the Netflix comparison, because sometimes they will just spend a lot of money on Michael Conforto for no reason.
Exactly. Totally right. And then cancel him after one
that's
season.
That's right. All right. Let's do a quick little Rockies preview. I'm sorry I said little. They're still a Major League Baseball team nominally, somehow.
They're not the Oakland A's. And by the way, now that I've said that, the Giants are going to lose 3 out of 4 to the A's this year. I'm sorry, but it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, the Rockies, the Giants should beat, but also I thought the Giants should have been more competitive against the Mets. I mean, we did point out that they could have been more competitive against the Mets, but they weren't. So they're 33-55, the Rockies are. And one thing I need to point out very strongly, I need to make this very clear, because I feel it's a deeply held belief, Doug. The Giants should beat them because they are 13-31 on the road.
Yeah.
They should get their clocks cleaned by the Giants. This is not Coors Field. They were 9-18 in June. They're 0-4 in July. They have four players who are above league average, and that's it. Hitting-wise, I should say. Ryan McMahon is their best hitter. So they are not a good lineup in a park that's supposed to increase offense. So that's one sign that they're not doing it well. They strike out a ton, which can help the Giants, of course, even with their ground ball stuff. Kyle Friedland is their only good starting pitcher, or above league average, I should say. And he's just barely above league average. Their bullpen, they still have Pierce Johnson as their closer, which when the Giants went into Coors Field and kept their unprecedented winning streak going there, I thought would have dispelled the notion that Pierce Johnson should be the closer. And yet there he is, ruining their entire bullpen, which is legitimately their only strength. And even then, it's not, they're not a good pitching staff on the road. So I don't know. The Giants kind of need to sweep them heading into the All-Star break. That would be really nice to sweep a team that they are objectively better than, but it's baseball. And it makes me sad sometimes. And it's the Rockies.
Yeah, it's the Rockies. And by the way, Chris Bryant is making the Giants look smart for basically not even pretending they were going to re-sign him.
Yeah.
He's not doing well this year. Not a lot of guys on that team are doing well this year. The Giants need to be able to beat this team. But, you know, that's also something we said earlier this year about the Royals. And then they didn't. And then they looked good for a while after that. So they can recover from not beating the Rockies. But when you have opportunities for wins like this, you need to take them, or else the season will start to slip away at some point.
So I wrote an article when they, after 78 games played, because it was going, game 81 was going to be on the weekend. So I didn't want to like write it while everyone was away. And I wanted to say this is one of the Giants' better records for basically the halfway point of the season. They were 44-34, 78 games in. That features a lot of like playoff appearances. One of the early Bruce Bochy, Barry Bonds seasons, oddly enough, that was fun to see. And I don't think we're in that situation, he said stupidly. But since that article, since game 78, the Giants are 3-6. So I don't know. It's also, we're talking about what, a 9-game sample. So who knows what's going to happen. But I think that they need to go into that All-Star break at least winning 2 out of 3 against the Rockies at home. I mean, what a terrible homestand that would be.
Yeah. They definitely have to win the series, or else I think we're all going to worry about this team an awful lot more than we already are. They need to start hitting. I mean, there's just no way around it. That's been the problem. The pitching hasn't been great, but it also isn't terrible. It's that the offense just hasn't shown up. And if they don't start, then it's going to be trouble.
And you know what? You kind of, with a far anxiety-led team, you kind of think, isn't this whole system designed to find the, you know, if this is the A's 2.0, the A's were good at finding hitters. You know, it seems like it shouldn't be this difficult, this dire. Then again, you know, they got Lamont Wade right there. Patrick Bailey. Again, they rope-a-doped us all with his power from the right side. Who knew? So there are things. But Doug, actually, just as a closing thought, what have your expectations for the Giants shifted at all? And or what are they right now?
I mean, after they had such a strong run in the second half of June, I think they should make the playoffs. I think that they can do it if they can get healthy. Obviously, that's a big if. Like you said, the injuries to Tyro and Haniger were not anything the Giants could do something about. But they absolutely have enough talent to at least sneak in as the last wild card. So I think, yeah, it's fair to expect that from them.
The competition is tightened up between the Phillies, Brewers, and Giants for that third wild card spot. I am going to count out the Pirates, although their season has been much better than I expected. I thought they'd be a lot closer to where the Rockies are. And I really think if you're looking on the periphery of teams that can make a run, I think we should count out the Cardinals at this point. It doesn't look like they're going to figure it out. But the Padres and the Mets, and I won't say that the Cubs are out of it. They're 6 under .500, and you know, maybe they make a deal or something. But the Padres have the talent. The Mets, I don't know. But they, you know, literally as soon as the Giants arrived, they were, and after Patrick Bailey beat them, they're like, oh, and they like woke up, and then suddenly they look like the team that everyone thought they'd be at the beginning of the year. So I don't know. Maybe they have a run in them to make it interesting, but that's, you know, there's definitely very easily 5 or 6 teams competing for the wild card right now. After the swoon, I don't think it's changed my opinion of the Giants very much. I just am more along the lines of like they have like an ecosystem, and so they need the ecosystem to be healthy, you know, all the parts of it working properly, and no dry creek beds or anything like that. And right now it seems like that's what's troubling. Whereas it seems like some of these other teams, they could subsist on a couple of guys really stepping up and carrying them for a week or two. So that's my big concern. We'll see what happens. I'm excited to talk to Roger this week and see if the Giants have guys coming up who can be those carriers in the future. If they drafted any of them, we'll let you know. In the meantime, check out the rest of Fans First Sports Network at Fans First SN. Also, you can check out Doug Brazzoni's excellent writing about the Giants. Where can they find you, Doug?
You can find me at giantsdoug.substack.com, where I write every Tuesday and Thursday. Hey, that's today, about the Giants.
And I'm writing at McCoveyChronicles.com still, and we'll see. Well, quality-wise, fluctuates wildly. So check that out. And I guess we're still on Twitter. I saw it like gasping for air the other day. And also it was our Giants Croncast Twitter account's 7th anniversary, Doug.
Wow, we made it.
Yeah. It is now in the first grade.
We did it, Joe.
Yeah, we did it. Yeah. So follow us at Giants Croncast, and wherever, if it winds up crashing the site, that account will direct you to where we wind up. Give us 5 stars on Spotify right there in the app or on Apple Podcasts if you have a chance. So until Monday, when we'll be back with an all-new episode,
go Giants!